The following program was pre-recorded on WFAN. It's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. It's supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Good morning. Welcome to another edition of Hello, My Name is Craig. Great to have you here as we embark on another season of Hello, My Name is Craig here in September of 2024. Joining me as always is Dan Trelaro. Danny, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Craig. Good morning. Good to be back.
Joining us now is Edgardo. Edgardo, thank you so much for joining us to share your story this morning.
Thank you for having me.
So it's an interesting twist today. Normally we talk to gamblers in recovery or even those who have fallen out of recovery, but Edgardo is the significant other of a previous guest we had on. Edgardo does not have a gambling problem, but we thought it was important to share the insights of someone who is with a compulsive gambler. So, Edgardo, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story today.
Sure. Thank you.
You know, we always kind of do the show through the eyes of the gambler. But as Dan and I always say, the people that are hurt the most are the loved ones and the family members and friends of the compulsive gambler. So, Edgardo, we'll get into the specifics of your story, but give people an idea of the emotional roller coaster it is to be married to or connected to a compulsive gambler.
So, my story for the most part kind of started back in about 2010. You know, Eric borrowed a little bit of money, you know, gave me some lie about, you know, loaning money out and debts on his house, things like that. So, you know, I loaned him money and I thought, it's okay. I'll he paid it back and that was that. And every once in a while we'd go to Vegas. But for me, it was just a trip, you know, like anybody else. We go to Vegas, you know, we go have fun. That was it. I did find it a bit odd that he would stay at the sports book for, you know, hours at a time. And I found it odd because I couldn't stand there being more than, you know, 10 minutes. And I was going crazy. But, you know, that was kind of the beginning of it, you know. And then after that, time passed by and he borrows money again. And I'm thinking, well, this is kind of weird, but all right. You know, he borrowed money before, he paid it back. No problem. Except this time it was a little bit, what he asked for was a little bit larger. But he slowly paid it back. And I think what happened was, because I paid off that significant loan, or by loaning him this money, he was able to pay off these credit cards and loans, which of course then turned into his credit score got higher. He was able to get access to more credit cards. He was able to do all these things. But I, you know, unknowingly did this for him and he took advantage of it.
Right.
A lot of this was done behind my back. I really didn't find out about it until he then comes back to me around 2019 and says to me, I have this six-figure debt that I can't pay for.
I want to stop you there for a moment. I want, if you don't mind, because I think it's important. I think it's important to walk through before we, you know, get into that level of debt and how you helped him. I want to go through, if you don't mind sharing emotionally, when you realized that he had betrayed your trust, what that moment is like, because I think sometimes we take for granted, we just come clean with our spouses or significant others or loved ones, everything's going to be okay because I'm coming clean. You know, typically, as Dan can speak to, you know, we're kind of forced to come clean because we're up against it. We can't pay a bill or, you know, financially we're in a really bad spot. So we're kind of forced into a certain level of honesty. But for you, as you fell in love with this man and now you're contemplating my life together with this guy and you wake up one day to complete betrayal of trust, what that moment is like for you.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, for the most part, I think what most people think about in the beginning is that the loss of money. And at the end, you know, after all this is said and done, it really has nothing to do with the money. It's that loss of trust.
Right.
It's, you know, it's all the lying that you then go back and you think, you know, what was going on? Why were you lying all this time? Why was, what was all this manipulation for? And it was just so that he can go off and get that high, if you want to call it that, from the gambling. Yeah, they, you know, there was a lot of lying, a lot of manipulation. He would, in many cases, throw tantrums or, you know, manipulate a situation where he knew he was that I would then turn around and say, well, you know what, forget it. Just I'll do it by myself, or I'll go by myself, or whatever it was. And right. That was his way of winning, because now he was able to say, great, I can go gamble. I don't have to deal with, you know, having to deal with the social situation or anything like that. And it's all of those moments that, you know, you don't realize at the time, but when you go back and you start thinking about all of that, it's very painful. And I can tell you, one of the most painful things that I found out about afterwards was more about, it had to do with a situation at one of my niece's funeral. You know, we're all there as a family, you know, devastated about this. You know, she was only 32 years old. She battled cancer for many years. And we're at the cemetery. And he went off to the bathroom to go gamble. And, you know, he could care less about what it was doing to me. He couldn't be there for me. He couldn't be there for my family, because that was more important to him. I mean, also keep in mind that one of the other things that happened is while all this was going on, this is even after I found out about all the gambling, my mother gets sick and she has a terminal illness. And instead of, you know, working on himself, he's off gambling. You know, I have to deal with taking care of my mom, her doctors, her medicine, all of that. I didn't have time to dedicate to, you know, to working on him and making sure that he was doing what he was supposed to be doing.
Right.
But that's not what he wanted. He wanted to gamble. That's what was more important to him. He couldn't care.
Danny, let me bring you in.
My life was going off.
Let me bring you in at that part. Yeah, we talk a lot on the show about the negative impact we have on the people closest to us, because they're in harm's way first and foremost. So when you hear Ed Gardner talk about how his partner, who I remember vividly the interview we did with him a few months ago, wasn't there for him, wasn't present, even though he might have physically been there, or, you know, gambling at a funeral, I'm sure that resonates with you as well.
It does. And Gardner, thank you so much for sharing. It's so important that we hear these perspectives. I can remember going to a funeral for a friend who died, and I was in the bathroom placing those same bets. I remember feeling like a robot and just having no emotional capacity, because, you know, a person who's struggling with a gambling addiction is struggling with an emotional issue. And you said it so well before, you know, it's not about the money. Obviously, the money problems result, and money is the fuel that continues to burn the fire, but it's the emotional part. And he was robotic, you know, knowing maybe the right thing to say, but feeling no emotion below it at the surface. And now you're left to deal with all that you have to deal with, and you don't have that emotional support at the time when you need it the most. And that is just telltale, you know, addiction of any kind, right? We're talking about gambling, but that could be someone who struggles with substance use, you know, alcohol use disorder. But with gambling, you just can't see it, right? Because you can't test for it. You can't give a positive urine screen. But everything you're talking about is what we consistently hear from the loved ones, that I don't know what's going on, is really bad, and they're not able to support me at times when I need it. And it's this mystery, right? That's the other part. It's the uncertainty. You don't know why. And you can repay money. That's great. But you can't repay trust. You can't repay safety or security. Those are all the things that we can't put a dollar sign on. So, yeah, everything you're talking about is really resonating.
You know, Gar, I remember when we did the interview, you know, two things stuck out to me. I asked him a question. If it was harder for him to kind of come to terms with his sexuality and share that with his family at the time, or was it harder to tell you and look you in the eye, someone he loves dearly, you know, that he's an addict. And he struggled with the answer. And as I recall it, he said it was actually as hard as it was for him to, you know, announce his sexuality to his family, because he didn't want to be a gay man, but he is, that it was harder to look you in the eye and tell you that he had betrayed you. And I wonder what that means to you.
So I actually do remember that moment, because that was one of the hardest moments that I had to deal with. Because the way I found out about this is because, really, just as I said, that day he happened to manipulate the situation, because we were supposed to go to a friend's house, and he manipulated the situation to get out of it. So I went through and I started looking through his accounts. And that's when I found this, you know, loan that I hadn't seen before. Because by this time he's now given me oversight into his accounts. And as soon as I saw that, I already knew what that was.
Right.
And when I walked into the bedroom and I saw him sitting on the bed, on the phone, gambling, probably, he, you know, I said to him, I just went over the accounts. This is what I found. And that look on his face, like, oh man, I just got caught. And that was hard, and it was hard for me, because what I wanted to find out in that moment was, even though I already knew what the answer was, I just needed to know if he was going to lie about it. I just needed to know if he was going to tell me the truth. And that was very difficult for me. But it was also a relief knowing that he actually told me the truth, because for him to tell me another lie on top of everything else at this point, I don't know what I would have done. And I can tell you right now, I don't know if the relationship would have endured after that.
Let me take a break on that. This is Hello, My Name is Craig on WFAN.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton, and supported by the Council on Compulsive Gambling of New Jersey, 800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to have Edgardo with us, and of course, Dan Trillaro. I'm going to ask you a tough question, Edgardo, and it's one that, you know, I've talked to my wife about. Dan, of course, has talked to people in his inner circle about it as well. Why did you stay with him? He had betrayed your trust. He had borrowed money beyond anything reasonable, hadn't paid you back in full, and he had lied to you repeatedly. And you just said when we went to break that if he had lied to you that one more time, when you kind of caught him in a web of lies with bank accounts and whatnot, that the relationship might not have survived it. I'm wondering how it did and why it did.
You know, it's a really good question, and it's a question I've been asked multiple times. And really, the simple answer to that is love.
Sure.
You know, it that's really what it came down to. We've been together now for over 28 years, and to not have to not fight for that for all of those years. I just thought it had to be worth it. It had to be worth the fight to try to get him back, if you will.
Got it.
Because it was, yeah, I mean, it was devastating, it was hurtful. I had, you know, as I look back, I think of how, you know, dumb I was to not, or naive, really, to not see it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was, and this is what I've told him before, it's just you and me, and we don't have kids, and we have us. So if we don't work on us, then we have nothing together. And I think that was, and seeing him in his program, you know, seeing how much he dove into his recovery program of Gamblers Anonymous, and me diving into Gammonaut. I think those were the two things that really saved us, because we were able to recover.
Would you say that now that he has proven that, you know, he is in recovery, he is in gamble, he's being honest with you and all those things that I'm sure you demanded to maintain this relationship, are you guys closer today as a result of this? Acknowledging that, you know, no one wants to go through it. But do you think your relationship is better today than maybe it was, you know, 10, 15 years ago?
Well, I will say this. There's highs and lows, and I think that's true of any relationship. Is it better overall? Yes. Do we still have our highs, and do we still have our lows? Absolutely. You know, but we work on them, and we are able to do that a lot better than before, because before I think it was just more of, we would each shut down and go to our corners. And now we actually have the tools to be able to talk to each other and express ourselves and, you know, stand up for ourselves. I mean, I stand up to him a lot more than I did before, which is something that I used to kind of back down. And a lot of that was just over the years. It was that manipulation again.
Sure.
You know, I just felt like, oh, well, it's a, you know, it's a losing battle. So why even try? And now I'm like, no, I'm not going to back down. I'm going to stand up for myself.
You know, it's interesting. Having never met you or him, I'm not sure if he shared this with you or not, but I told him he was, as I am in my life, he is blessed to have a saint, because that's what you are. And I know he appreciates that. He verbalized how much he appreciates that. But he has a saint in his life, and it's you. And I hope the fight was worth it. I know it's worth it, because you have a damn near 30-year relationship with this man. And it's, you know, it's worth something. And the fact that you're willing to work to maintain it and keep it and to foster it and to really protect him from himself says a lot about you. And he did express to Dan and I how grateful he is to have you in his life, just so you know.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, but I still get frustrated. I'm not going to lie. I mean, there's a lot of frustration that goes along with it. And but, you know, he decided to quit his high-paying job. I didn't agree with it, but he did it anyway. You know, I still have to open up the mail. I still have to take over. I'm still paying most of the utility bills. So, you know, I do still get frustrated a lot of times, but I also know that, you know, like you said, he is on his journey. He is working on himself, and we are working on ourselves together. And that love that we have is the only bond, I think, that is so strong that that's what keeps us together.
You were able to love him when he couldn't love himself, which is some of the things that you hear a lot of times, you know, when the person's really in the throes of the addiction and you know, looking yourself in the mirror, you know, and I could speak as it got worse for myself. And I think Craig can probably agree with this. It was hard to even look in a mirror, and to have someone like yourself who's strong enough to do that, even though you didn't want to, you know, there are days, and you just kind of said, like, it's frustrating, and there can still be elements of resentment, right? When you have to sit there. You know, there were times in my previous relationship where, you know, it unfortunately didn't work out. And obviously I know the reasons why, but it was, you know, not the life that the individual signs up for. And then how do you move forward from that? Because it's more than just the money problems, right? It's the betrayal. It's the stress, the confusion. It leads to self-doubt on your end. And that's why oftentimes the spouse or the family members won't confront or talk, because they don't know much about it. Maybe they're just wrong. They're blowing something out of proportion, and it takes time. But to gain that confidence, I'm so glad and thankful that you gain that confidence, because you have a voice and your voice matters. And it shows the level of self-respect that you then have for yourself, which can only help strengthen the relationship.
Absolutely. And if there's actually one thing that I would like for gamblers to know and to keep in mind, is that there are consequences to their actions for gambling. It not only affected their lives, but it also affected all of us. We were all affected. We did get hurt. And we sometimes continue to live with that, you know, aftermath of all of that debris of that explosive event. And the gambler doesn't get to go out and commit these sins and do all these things and then ask the rest of us to feel sympathy and say, oh, you know, that's okay, and absolve them of their consequences. We do have to, we as the loved ones do have to hold the gamblers, you know, accountable for the consequences. And he is aware of all of that.
Maybe it's shifting addictions. And that's the one thing that a lot of family members will look towards. they'll say, hey, listen, the individual doesn't gamble anymore, but now I see them spending a lot of time day trading, you know, because there's a lot of overlap. So there's other certain behaviors that almost fill the void for that experience or that feeling that the individual has now left because they're trying to start that recovery journey. And it's easy to substitute addiction. We see it all the time, you know, gambling into alcohol or into shopping or working out. And so all of it, or they pour themselves into a relationship so much, now it becomes so overbearing. And you're left to say, hold on a second, wait a second, this also isn't healthy. So it's about balance and moderation, but also going through that journey together. And it is so great to have you on here today. So thank you so much for sharing.
No, thank you. And yeah, to sort of touch on that topic is that, yeah, one of the things that I felt that Eric has now replaced his addiction with is Gamblers Anonymous. I mean, there could be worse addictions to be, you know, to transfer to, but it, you know, he's addicted to Gamblers Anonymous. He has dove in head first. He goes to a lot of meetings. He's a trustee now for the ISO. He's, you know, doing all of these things for Gamblers Anonymous, a lot of fellowship and a lot of, you know, meetings. But like I said, there could be worse things. He could have dove into another addiction that could have been worse. So I pick my battles now.
Well, well said. Well, listen, we really appreciate having you on today and sharing. And we both wish you just tremendous amount of continued success, peace and grace. And just thank you so much. And we hope you have a great, great day.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for having me on.
If you do have someone in your life or it's you yourself, recognize there is help out there and you can figure out your issues and obviously get yourself into a good recovery program and have a life worth living. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you so much for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.